Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Aptly, today's show is sponsored by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. I say that in a different voice because the person who's on for today's show is in fact the CEO and founder of ActiveCampaign. This is not a paid op. This is a celebration. Jason and the team at ActiveCampaign literally just announced a $100 million Series B. You've seen Jason on my show before. He talked about the development of this company over a, call it, I don't know, 12-year period as a one-man shop to employing over 500 people now. Absolutely incredible story. Not just a great story for Chicago, but a great story in general. On this show, we do a little quick catch-up on what ActiveCampaign is, just because you need to know, not that you don't already know from every ad we've ever run in the show. But a little bit background on, like, why raise the money now? And there's some good lessons to be heard and had here about raising money and about the value of raising not when you need it, but when you want it. And that's something that Jason and the ActiveCampaign have done. And we've had several founders on the show that have talked about this, that the fantastic position as a founder it puts you in to not be chasing after venture capital, but rather accepting venture capital only when it is absolutely perfect for you. And it positions ActiveCampaign, which already has 65,000 businesses on their client list, actually more than that now, to chase after the global market. And I think that's the part that's most compelling. So this is my interview with the founder and CEO of ActiveCampaign, Jason Vandenboom. All right. Well, obviously, I have to start the show by congratulating on $100 million Series B.
Thank you.
That's incredible. We're pretty excited. Yeah. I would imagine you guys are fairly elated over there.
Yeah, no, it's always fun too, because we don't think of raising as like a goal or anything like that, but it is it's an exciting milestone.
So that's one of the parts of the show that I want to focus on after we get through all of the fun pieces here, is just like the difference between raising when you can and want to versus raising when you need, and this like perpetual cycle that some founders, for obvious reasons, like some businesses just require this and some don't.
Yeah.
But for obvious reasons, there are people who spend a lot of time chasing VCs around instead of chasing business. And it just becomes this like perpetual cycle that you can't get out of.
Yeah. And it's, you know, people haven't seen us raise a lot. We started in 2003.
Yeah.
We took 13 years to raise our Series A. And then another number of years for the Series B, but I'd rather focus on the business, focus on customer value, than play that sort of what now is more of a traditional game, if you will.
Yeah, and it's kind of a sad thing actually, and we'll talk more about that. I would say normally on a show, I would say tell me more about ActiveCampaign, but given the fact that like 85% of our podcasts start off with me saying, see why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign, I don't think we need to go into it.
Yeah.
What I do think would be interesting is you're on this sort of, it's not a media tour now, but it's sort of like a, you know, everyone's giving the pat on the back and you're getting some exposure to tell the world about this. It's just due for 12 years of slowly growing this and raising money. Was it 2015 or?
Late 2016.
Late 2016 was the last time. And your business, I mean, from my vantage point, the business hasn't significantly changed other than just rapid growth.
Yeah.
And the product is still just getting better and better. And we are users of ActiveCampaign, which I can say non-paid. Like it is awesome as a product for a company that is like Technori because of the size and simplicity of the tools. How do you take this money and bring this like ever? Because you're already an international business.
Very much so. So over half of our customers are international. We're actually in 161 countries.
Yep.
More countries than McDonald's, which is pretty cool. And we're running out of countries to get into. But that's
good,
all
good problem to have.
Yeah, that's all without a lot of direct intention, meaning we haven't really built up until recently more direct sales, support, and customer success in those regions. So just within the last year or so, we opened up Sydney, Australia. We just opened up an office in Dublin that's been scaling quickly and a growing presence in Brazil as well. So looking to address those with a little bit more intention.
Yep.
It's definitely in the plan.
So I had and I'm sure you know the folks over at G2 very well. And Godot was on the show, and Ryan was on the show, and Tim has been on the show. I think everyone has been on the show from that company. And there's a lot of, it's different in the trajectory and like how quickly they went and raised 100 and so on and so forth as compared to the slower trait that you guys have taken. But if we were to just say, let's start at 2015 or 2016 as you raised that round and say, like, for the year or two before that, you were starting to become like a bigger business. And prior to that, it was different iterations and more of a one-man sort of team as you slowly rolled. G2 has taken an approach that I think is is something that I hope a lot of other companies in Chicago follow. And the same thing, obviously, for you guys in this, and anytime jump in with if you feel like there's differences or something. Yeah. When I talked to Godard about it, it was like, we need to show who we can be most valuable to, how we can bring them the most value, how we can keep them wanting to work with us, and then how do we get them to tell everyone else about us?
Yeah.
And once you figure that out, then we can raise enough money to like amplify that and figure out how to monetize it better and build these different tracks. That was the first part. So you see their raises in sequential order, then they get to the $100 million raise last year. And immediately, you know, when it was G2 Crowd before and Tim was running it before Godard came back in, they hired Ryan Panici to come in, and he had previously been Salesforce and all these other places. Yeah. And their big thing with the 100 was, we want APAC. We want to get all over the world, but we don't want to just market in other places. We want to set up shop in these different places. And that's something that I'm seeing, you know, from the press releases and things and heard you talking, some of the things you guys are doing. Why do you think... I mean, part of this answering this is why raise 100? And the other part of this is like, what does this stand to allow you to do that even being on the revenue model you were previously living on maybe didn't do, which you guys are making plenty of cash. I didn't mean that to...
Yeah. And so one piece to that I would say is like the idea of going international as a business, you don't have to actually use that much capital. If you take that approach of like chasing customer value... if you take that approach of finding a couple key customers, really attaching to them, making them a success, that organic will happen locally. And you don't like, so we've had this strong international without even localizing our website in the past. We're offering it in different currencies, which is pretty amazing.
That is actually insane. And you think
so now we're going through that, doing that with a little more intention. What we find, you take a market like Brazil or something like that, the ability to market more locally and provide sales success and support more locally has a real advantage, right? Yeah. Which is an obvious thing when you say it out loud.
It's fun, but that's, I want to circle on that because that's a funny thing that a lot of companies have come on here. And there's a different mentality. Some of it's Chicago, but some of it's also just younger entrepreneurs. There's a thought process of the older school that's like, you know, trim and scrape and trim and just like make it as cheap and high margin as we can. And how do you scale it really, really quickly without changing the cost?
Yeah.
And there's a younger entrepreneur set. And a lot of those that I've gotten to meet here in Chicago that are like, we want to build a nucleus that can be scaled and people trust us and believe in us, and that your brand value, something that I think I would say 10 years ago, but really like 20 years ago, did not exist. Like a brand was whatever marketing was going on. Now brand value, when you work with the Active Campaign, it doesn't just mean that like that's my CRM. It's like, I know Shay. I call Shay when I have problems. I know who's going to answer the phone.
It's much more than tech. So I think like the idea of just producing tech, producing functionality, anyone can do that.
Yep.
We just released a various quality, maybe. We just released this whole series of commitments to our customers in terms of from pricing, working with us, things that nobody else really puts on paper, but we've always lived by it, and we've always thought that was normal, but we're throwing it out there and actually putting it on paper and really backing this idea of making our customers a true success. And I think that's something that in addition to building a business that's long lasting, that can really, you know, last time and continue.
Which you've already proven prior to the money.
Yeah.
You guys are like a New York cockroach, like it'll never go away.
Yeah. It's, 17 years in is a long time. So.
You look younger than the last time I saw you.
Yeah.
So you must be skiing and getting plenty of sun and it's all good. So with that, raising 100, particularly in your space, is... I don't mean this in a bad way, but it does put a little bit of a target on your back to say, like, that's a real business that we have to pay attention to. And I think one of the things, and I've talked to this, talked about this with Steven from Cameo, that he was a really nifty, cool app with like a cool concept that's going to win a lot of awards for being something unique that year. And then the minute you go to Kleiner Perkins and you raise 50 at 300 plus, all of a sudden people are like, oh, that's okay. So that's someone we got to like look out for because they're going to try to land grab. You have to immediately take assessment of the people. Like, you already know your main competitors that are ahead of you. You have to take assessment of the people behind you. Be like, who's the next Active Campaign that we should be looking out for? How do you and the team look back at all the companies now that you are, I mean, you were on the map before, but this is like, there's a lot of PR. You don't get PR for you don't release your revenue, so you don't get PR for that.
Yeah, PR, you, but also, yeah, we're over 90,000 customers now. Like, people have taken notice with that.
And then
market.
People want to get that from you.
Exactly. And the thing I take comfort in is we're just not a version 2 or a next gen of something existing.
Yes.
So we're creating a category of customer experience automation, doing it in a way where we just care about customer data, unifying that together, and providing actionable ideas. It goes against the thought process of a lot of incumbents in the space. So for them to be able to transform and try to attack this in the same way, breaks down their current sales process, breaks down their current like comp process. Yep. So it's kind of fascinating in the way of there's no like singular competitor. Now, if you look at it a different way, we have tons of them by the very fact that we're creating a category. Although I talk internally a lot, like that's not what we'll pay attention to. Once again, like if you just keep the guiding light, and this becomes harder and harder over time, I think the greater you scale, the more customers you have, and the more like a potential for a wrong move takes place. If you just chase customer success, chase customer value, and you don't play into competitors, you don't play into a lot of other things, that'll actually create innovation. Just like if you only look at the market, or if you try to react to someone that's starting to get some momentum, you're just going to start turning into this odd sort of platform that's trying to just do a lot of different things with no conviction behind it.
I remember in a podcast that I had with John Chambers, the former CEO of Cisco, he said that when building this company, which obviously they had a gazillion acquisitions, and he was like, aside from his quote, which is awesome, he was basically saying like, we love new upstarts because that's a great acquisition for us who's like picking up a market spot that we just couldn't pick up with the way that we operate. But his line was basically, I know my competitors' names. I don't pay attention to them at all. They have zero impact on where I'm going. My job is, I made a promise. I'm going to keep the promise. I'm going to make a new promise. I'm going to keep the promise.
Yeah.
And that's my focus. And like, I've got CFOs and smart people to tell me if my promises are being kept financially good for us or bad for us, and then we change. Yeah. I'm not the guy to look at that. You know, and so I think you're totally right about that. And I think one of the other things that's unique about your story is also the technical co-founder component of this, and like knowing what your product was when you got started, what it is today, what it can be tomorrow, continued to develop. You're also down the street from Sprout Social, which just IPO'd, and Justin is a very similar, I think, kind of person in like you, in that he is a company that when he launched, you know, Hootsuite, all these social media management things were just like popping up every 5 minutes. And he was like, I'm staying the course and building a great tool that plugs into ActiveCampaign and other things that people can use.
Yeah. Not getting distracted by everything else.
He's just like, he's just on it. So like, what are some of the things that you have found as a founder that keep you completely grounded in the product and keep you obsessed? Because 17 years is a really long time for a marriage, let alone a company, let alone anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it feels like just a couple of years. It goes by really fast.
Yeah. Well, as I said, you look younger.
But I think there's an advantage of taking that like long, slow route. I think a lot of people look at that and say, like, that's must have been a terrible first decade of your life. But that's where a lot of the learnings of what we're developing today came from.
Yep.
So I truly value that. I think also kind of, you know, digging in even further on that idea of not necessarily following or reacting to competitors, I would say the same thing with your customers in an odd way.
Yeah.
Meaning we don't allow any singular customer to take up more than 0.5% of our revenue for a reason. And now it's easier. We have a lot of revenue. Earlier on, we had to say no at times.
And that's a crazy, like, I think, so
you make a lot of people upset when you do that internally.
So no, if you let's take that conversation towards this, the fundraising differences, because you talked about just 2 seconds ago, well, there's two things, there's like nine things, but we'll pick three. The one thing that you said that I think is incredibly important is people think of this 17 year journey and think, oh, that must've been a bitch. Like, how did you do it? And you're like, quite honestly, I wasn't chasing high growth, rapid scale, chasing VCs, chasing after people who I took money from, chasing after me. I wasn't in that world. And so I was building a small business.
Yeah, I was literally just chasing customer value. I'd be on like the L and someone would order for $35. I'd jump off, go home, spend like 4 or 10 hours with that customer, figure it out at an hourly rate. That's probably not great.
Yeah, but it worked.
But allows you to build up that understanding. But I think that you were correct in like sometimes it's needed. Sometimes it's needed for a company, and sometimes that's
we talk about Kyle from Clearcover. Like his business requires a lot of money.
But if it doesn't, if you can find a way, it just takes a little longer and it takes a mindset that requires a little bit more time. But I think there's this, all too often people talk about it as it's either you're all in on bootstrapping or all in on just like nonstop fundraising.
Which I don't understand.
I call BS on that whole idea.
Yeah,
I think there's a, one, both sides work great for certain types of companies. That's fine. But there's also a blended approach where you can take a lot of those elements and aspects of bootstrapping, of something long term, of creating something of substance that'll have an impact throughout the world. But then also tie in at the right moments in a way that's just truly assistive to the company and not as distracting, more on the investment side as well.
Totally agree with you. And I think it actually has a great deal to do with your success is the approach that you take to this. And it was not clearly not planned that way, obviously, as the story goes, like, I'm going to solve problems as they arise.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make what my, I'm going to focus on is not making problems for myself. That's like, if I can just stay out of creating my own problems, I think I can figure out how to do this. When you look at, and if you can share sort of your, I mean, you're involved in a lot of things. You see a lot of companies, you know, the stories that are going on behind the scenes, people who raise money when they're at a disadvantage, depending on how disadvantaged and how much money, are immediately have two jobs. Like I would believe that if you had raised in you said 2003. So let's say you did this for 4 years and raised 5 or 10 million. Not small change, but like not a huge amount of money.
But it would probably have been a material amount of the company at the time.
Correct. There's no way you could have run and said, I'm going to say no to a customer taking a half percentage. They would have fired you.
So basically what happens is if you take too much too early, you lose optionality, right? And for me, my guiding light has always been maintain as much optionality as possible.
Correct.
I want to do what feels right for innovation, not what feels right for any singular party, whether that singular party be a customer,
or you,
a market, myself, or an investor, right? And so maintaining that and be able to own that, it's hard though at the same time.
Well, I just if you never didn't thought have of that, you wouldn't have gotten option. Here. Right?
And that's the curious thing. And I'm glad I never thought of that as an option early on because it turns out that it was beneficial. But
so what do you think are the advantages that are immediately met other than the fact that it does take longer? Sometimes not.
Yeah, true.
What do you think of the advantage other than the obvious? You just stated the fact that it's optionality from a business perspective. What are the advantages that you're capitalizing on now because of this? From, you don't have to obviously talk about the terms specifically, but like when I look at me going to the table to negotiate and I don't have, you know, almost $100 million in revenue, I have a very hard time negotiating anything in my favor. I need money and you know it. It's coming out of my pores. If you're coming in and it's like, no, we don't need the money. We want the money because we want to do X, Y, and Z. How much has that changed your ability to negotiate and to set you guys up for the future?
I think it changes a lot and hopefully gives you time with whatever parties you're going to be working with.
Yep.
Meaning, so our lead investor in the B was Susquehanna, and I started talking to them 3 years ago. Like that's
you're
pretty
the
crazy.
Most patient person like, I know, by the way. I just want to get that
and they
out
are
there.
Too, to an extent.
Yeah,
right?
Clearly.
Like, that's a lot of like really positive updates and things and some other things thrown in there just to see how they take it. And we did that strategy with a number of different firms. And you get an understanding of it's not all about money. And I think that's what's sort of glorified out there. That's what people talk about. It's the amount of the raise. It's all this stuff. And
it's
like
the headlines you just grabbed
exactly.
despite building a fantastic
which I appreciate
business.
All of it because it is a mini validator of fantastic business. But even more so, like if you truly care about building something long-term and sustainable, you better hope that they're aligned.
Yeah.
Right? Even if they don't have control or anything like that, you don't want to have a situation where you have some misalignment. So I think taking the time and taking the patience, now that's hard. That's much easier said than done. Yeah.
Well, there's certain businesses that it can allow. I mean, every business is at some time or another in a vacuum. They're in a hot, they got to get out of this quickly, right?
Yeah.
Your business is one where there is such a potential market opportunity there, and it's not just getting 90,000 clients.
Yeah.
It could be 15 layers of products across 9. I mean, there's so
and
much.
And so when we're thinking about, you know, we're creating this category. It's gaining true momentum. We're seeing it impact existing categories and whatnot. That's part of the thinking behind. We don't necessarily, we could do this with or without.
Yeah.
So we have that optionality, but I want to be able to push on different things at different times and have that ability, right? So it's my duty is in terms of running the company to ensure the company has that opportunity. We don't want to create a category of customer experience automation and be like number two or three in the space, but like a side note, like was one of the first.
Yeah.
Like
first then, ever, comma,
and then
now
quickly
fifth.
Faded into yeah. the background. That's not exciting, right?
No,
and
so that's not good.
We're continuing to just invest like crazy on innovation. I think a lot of people talk about being product first.
Yeah.
They see a little bit of success and they're like, yeah, we're really product first. And then everything is just a sales and marketing machine.
Yeah.
I think we've proven the ability, like we added, you know, nearly 300 people last year.
Yep.
A lot of that being product and tech, of really investing there and not slowing down on that side of things. I think all too often, that's why we see a lot of companies gain a lot of momentum, and then all of a sudden something like happens. Like it's just like it slowly hits a wall.
It's back burner, cut money.
Yeah, it could be market, it could be a bunch of things, but oftentimes when I look at it, it has a feeling of, you know, they had a ton of innovation, it caused that surge.
Yep.
And then they just kind of relied on the innovation of the past and turned it into a sales and marketing machine.
Yeah.
And which sounds odd because, like, you know, we're arguably a MarTech, you know, related company for me to be saying
that.
That's
a safe assumption than MarTech.
Yeah. So it's, but I truly believe in that. Like, it's, and even more than being product first, you should be really customer first because that's what's going to really guide everything.
I think it's, this is so funny that the way that you presented this, I have a feeling it's going to end up on a meme or something on Instagram. I imagine that's going to happen. but it's funny you say this because we were just talking on the Saturday show. Sean Brown from Y-Chart set us up with this whole thing. So I go into this whole market watch. So if people are listening to this podcast, you should listen to the Saturday show. We talk about stocks. Half of the Fortune 500 companies in 10 years will not even be on it. They won't even be around. Half the companies that will be on the Fortune, the S&P 500 in the next decade don't exist yet. And I think, or if they do exist, they existed in the way that you guys kind of started and they haven't hit their boom yet. Those companies, I think, are going to, for the most part, symptomatically, they're going to look like you. They're going to be companies that value customers. They're a company that the brand was built not because of the shiny logo and some marketing company paint color on it that people said was cool that year. The brand is what your experience has been with us.
Yeah. And it's authentic and it's organic and you can't necessarily game that. You can't necessarily
The only way to keep it is to keep building great product. If you stop building great product, your brand will be existing, but it will change into that's that shitty company that we don't use anymore.
And I think that'll only advance faster and faster and faster.
Totally. And and that's why we talk about this on other podcasts, that the modern differentiator in a tech world where people can build and rip and steal tech all day long. The brand is the differentiator. What you do, what you say you're going to do, what you do with it is your brand. That's everything. That's how you defend. So now as you, not that anything changes because it's just money in the bank account and just more access to more stuff. How do your responsibilities, both as a CEO and as a company, change? What are the things that the pressures that maybe are on you now? How is it different? I don't mean even a week ago. How is it different in 2003, other than some wrinkles, you know, where are we at?
It's really echoing kind of what you say of there's this new era, there's this advancement when it comes to a customer experience. And that's why we're so focused on this idea of customer experience automation as a category where people can combine best-in-class tooling to provide the best experience at every point, but where it actually feels native and feels fully connected. All too often you work with a brand, maybe buy something, you have a problem or something, and all of a sudden they start marketing to you at the wrong moment.
Yep.
Nobody wants that or expects that. They expect something much better. And the fascinating thing about that is we oftentimes look at that problem and we think like customer experiences and getting this really well done must be a mid-market or enterprise problem. And certainly they're focused on it.
Yeah.
But I'd say small businesses as well and startups are even almost more so because they need that. They need
that
differentiator. And the thing is like being able to democratize the ability for them to create an amazing customer experience is a really exciting thing to go after. And as we solve for that, we're also solving for mid-market enterprise. But to echo what I said earlier of like, it can't just be feature like function. It can't be tech. I think that's another thing we're going to see continuing to change over time where software and technology options and things like that, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, platforms need to be more of a partner to a business, giving them suggestions, giving them ideas based on data and based on an understanding of the business so that they can just implement and they don't have to have giant rollouts. Because otherwise, you just end up with a collection of like really amazing sounding products and platforms that never get implemented. Yeah. Or if they do, it's the most basic implementation.
So I know I want to wrap up nerding out a little bit with you on this. Like, one question is, so as you raise this, and obviously you now have other responsibilities because the more investors you add, the more responsibilities you have to them and to future investors, whatever. How much time do you get in front of the code? How much time do you get in front of the product yourself? How involved do you get to remain? Is that something that is still front and center for you?
Yeah. So product, I'd say, is still my first and foremost sort of focus.
Yep.
I see that if someone asks me ever, like, what keeps you up at night? It's product. It's yeah. It's the potential of becoming a company that starts to become very conservative in product decisions and starts to do the safe thing. That leads to a company that will have decelerating growth because you're going to be relying on innovation of past.
I just literally heard a bunch of emails come in from future VCs who are looking to know if they can introduce to you for a Series C based on that response. I'm just kidding. Yeah. It's probably true. It's the perfect response is my point. On the tech product, the one question I have for you, just as a curious person who's now sort of getting into the growth hacking world, automation, obviously your business, and the use of maybe eliminating so much reliance on cold call and selling and more about timing, using LinkedIn and tools like DuckSoup and others that enable you to automate the process of connecting and reaching people and messaging them and bringing it into an automated email process, which leads to the presumably the highest qualified lead landing a call with me or a salesperson. Where do you see the future of how big companies use automation to sell product?
So I don't think it's just purely on the outbound, like setting.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Out, right. So I think it's very much about you're automating to find the right time, which is you're exactly right with that. Like timing matters so much.
Oh my God, yeah.
And people still haven't tapped into it as much as they can. The right piece of content, and like so, an ideal customer experience in my mind is one where no two customers share the same experience.
Yep.
Where that content is different for every single customer, the timing's different. Even going down to the channel, like reaching you at the time in the place you like,
you want to be
when you want to, with the content you're actually going to be receptive to and enjoy. Right. So not a situation of just trying to like throw things on people. Also, I'd say it's also about assisting like actual humans in the company. So like it's not just about automating and taking that personal approach out. It's about enabling.
I think that's the thing that is the mistake is everyone's making.
Yeah.
Is there whether they're looking at it this way or they're actually doing it. I know a lot of companies that in their sales process are like, well, how do we cut, you know, Frank and Josie out?
It's like what you end up with is like maybe you take what used to be a sales process and now it's a chatbot.
Yeah.
And there's certainly valid times and purposes and situations to use those.
But like, mostly just gambling sites, actually. But yeah, it's pretty much the only time a chatbot is a bad influence on me.
Yeah. But having that personal approach and like that personal is still valuable. But how do you make that more efficient? How do you enable them further? So it's in the end, the consumer of a brand is getting an experience they enjoy. And then also the person actually working within the company is reaching people at those enjoyable moments and being assisted at the same time.
I'm going to let you go on this one piece here. Obviously, we're big supporters of ActiveCampaign. We love ActiveCampaign, and you're in most of our shows in some capacity.
I appreciate that.
So this is an opportunity for you to tell the people on the listening end of this, what are maybe the one or two things that you think are the most favorite parts of ActiveCampaign? Why people should use it? I know why I say I use it, but why do you think companies of, you know, let's say entrepreneurial companies, since this show is called Technori, why do you think it's a valuable product for people?
It's a valuable product because it's a growth mechanism. It'll help you improve customer experiences. It'll help you save time as well. But I think the real value comes in the way of you can connect your customer experience together, but we will give you ideas.
Yep.
You don't have to read a bunch of things, figure out like, how can I create some automated workflows? We have so many different ideas and so many different verticals and based around your data and whatnot. So when you get started, you don't get this blank slate and you're having to like figure out how do I automate a customer experience? That's daunting. We'll give you like, here's how we think you could save a little time on your sales process. Or maybe based on your business, there's a way you can create more advocates. And here's a flow and you can customize it and change it and tweak it to your business a little bit. But that ability to get started quickly, where you don't have to come up with all the answers yourself, combination of the platform and our customer success team, that is so valuable. So it's
completely,
you're holding yourself back if you don't try something like that.
The piece that has always been a sticker for us is you know, I've 6 CRMs in at this point now, and I've tried all of them that you know. Integration, building it. Yeah. I have no idea what I'm doing. You guys have been amazing at helping us and portfolio companies we know build it out really quickly. And to be totally honest with you, when you think about how many customers you have, that's insane. Like 90,000 customers, and we have people who are on the phone with you like that.
Yeah, but I think that's part of the like when we think about creating a business, when we think about funding, we try to think about everything in a non-traditional manner.
Yeah.
And to your point, like that's what I want to hear from people. Like this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like this doesn't make sense on paper. This doesn't make sense that this can be unlocked. But I think that's innovation, even outside of just tech. Like, that's innovation in how you can build a business, which is amazing.
It's funny to me with this, and I'll let you go now, I promise. It's funny with this, as I think of, like, Spot Hero and what Mark has built. It's, like, the least favorable place to be is when someone's pissed off about parking and calling you. Mm. And so that customer success team is, like, as like one of the... It's not quite as bad as, like, collecting on student loans. That's maybe the worst job in the world. The only other time people call you is when an email didn't go through or something is screwed up and they're trying to fix or troubleshoot something. Like, so your customer people probably mostly only handle calls of people who are in panic mode.
Yeah, and a little bit of both. I'd say a lot of people call in
to say thank you.
No, seriously, to say, like, because they solve something that seems so complex.
Yeah.
And they did it, and they just need to tell someone. And I mean that authentically, because it's just like you take a complex customer experience problem and you solve it. It's just like a light bulb moment.
Little spin-off company, talk space for MarTech. Yeah. You just call in and, you know, tell us about how things are.
That'd be a great place to work.
I can help you with that. Jason, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Congratulations on this round. I know you guys have a ton of great stuff coming forward. People can go to activecampaign.com/technori. The promo still exists. Get your first 2 months for free. I will have to update the read to 90,000 customers instead of 60,000. Thank you very much, and congrats to you and the team.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Of course. If you've got any questions for me or Jason, feel free to DM me on Instagram or Twitter at Technori or at Katoon to invest in featured startups on the Startup Showcase, which is live on WGN Radio from noon to 1 CST. Go to technori.com. Boom. That's a wrap.